You're listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, K201DA in King Cove, Alaska.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guest on today's show is Jeff Lowenfels. Since 1976, Jeff has been giving gardening and yardening advice in his weekly Anchorage Daily News column, the longest-running gardening column in the United States. He has observed the changing climate and the effect it has had on Alaska's growing season and the types of plants, vegetables, and fruits that can now be grown in South Central Alaska. He has long been on the forefront of advocating for an organic and sustainable yard and garden. We'll chat about the weird winter and spring we have just had, the possibility of ash fall from Mount Spur, and the effect this strange year will have on your yard and garden this spring and summer. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
For students learning English, who gets to teach English in American classrooms?
Teachers who may have an accent, they were not hired to teach because there was a misunderstanding that the children will get our accents.
I'm Sarah McConnell. Join me for With Good Reason.
This Friday at 8:30 p.m. on Alaska Public Media, FM 91.1 or alaskapublic.org.
This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guest today is Jeff Lowenfels, who has been writing a gardening column for the Anchorage Daily News since 1976, the longest-running gardening column in the United States. Jeff is the former president of the Garden Writers of America. He is a GWA fellow and in 2005 was inducted into the GWA Hall of Fame. He is a leader in the organic gardening sustainability movement. Thanks for joining me today, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Well, it's really great to have you back and chat with you because I promised to get you back sooner than I actually did because the last time I talked to you, we were discussing was either the fall of 23 or 24, and you had just been profiled in the Washington Post for your observations on climate change, specifically in Alaska. And now we are in this crazy upside down year with no snow this winter and loads of snow this spring. And I know your columns at this point are probably changing on a daily basis in terms of what you need to let people know.
Yeah, they definitely are. But I think it was actually it was the New York Times magazine section. That's what it was. It wasn't the Post, but it was.
The New York Times. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for correcting that.
Yeah. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. It's just. It's not like you know. You write a garden column, one of your biggest fears is how many different ways can you tell people they need to start tomatoes without, you know, being in the Inlanders and rewriting a column? You know, it's just, it's a difficult thing to do, but whew, man, things are always different, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And it's, so let's start with like what you have noticed since 1976. I mean, I grew up in Anchorage, I was, 12 years old in 1976, but so that's about the time I probably started to notice my environment. And throughout the late 70s and specifically the 80s when I came back from college and the 90s and the 2000s, huge changes. And all of us who grew up there have noticed this huge change since we were kids.
Yeah, you know, and of course I didn't grow up in Anchorage, so I didn't notice a change when I first got there. But there was one statistic that just blew my socks away. There was an agricultural research station in Talkeetna, not that far away from Anchorage. And I think in the 1870s, the reading was 65 or 67 growing days. Today, it's 137 plus.
Wow.
How'd
so it's like doubled.
Yes, exactly. So whenever I hear somebody raise the argument, there's no global warming, I give them that statistic. The argument's over. You know, I mean, I can't believe that diehard anti-climate person has to recognize. Now, you can argue, is it man-made or is it climate? Who knows?
Right.
But there's no question it's occurring, and it has occurred.
And what does that bode for agriculture in Alaska?
Great things. I mean, we're going to be, it could be, it could very well be if things continue and global temperatures increasing, whether it's global warming, it could be that we're the place where people need to come and get their food. Wow. You know, we won't have any salmon left, but we'll be able finally we'll be able to grow barley. You know, I mean, we've been trying how many years? I would venture to guess if they ran that experiment across the inlet, you know, the agricultural attempt, that was what, 20 some odd years ago. If they ran it today, I think they'd have much more success. You know, maybe we can bring back dairy to Alaska. You know, we don't have any dairy really to speak of. So
I was a Matanuska Maid kid. I remember those days.
Exactly. So
you know, dairy here.
You know, so maybe we'll get that back. Maybe we'll get back. You know, maybe we'll have some real good stuff. And you know, you and I living in Alaska as gardeners, we won't just have to grow rhubarb. You know, we can try other fruits. Although rhubarb's probably a vegetable, but
it's a I just reviewed your rhubarb column, and especially now because you know, I'm not in Anchorage right now, I'm just temporarily in Juneau, and I came home a couple weekends ago, it was actually last weekend, so we're recording on April 12th, and I'm saying that because the show will air on May 1st, but things could really change in a lot of ways by then.
Oh no, they will change. I mean, guaranteed they will change. If you in South Central, if you look at the buds, they're swelling. Well, first of all, the geese come back to the Anchorage area this week, so that's a good sign. They can withstand cold, but we don't have resident geese that stay over. I don't think we do. And then about the 10th of May, maybe a day or so earlier, boom, there'll be squirrel's ears size, and that's it. That's the end of the frosts. Yeah. So how many days is that? That's not that many days.
Yeah, it's like 30 days away, I think.
And by the time this airs, it'll only be, it'll be 9 days away. So it's here. We're going to have another season. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. So, I'm convinced.
Okay, good. I am too. I can't wait to get back to Anchorage for the summer. So what is the impact of the winter we just had in Anchorage? What is going to be the impact in the spring once we can start planting and be outside, and not just on our yards, but also just on the environment in general?
You want the geek answer?
Yeah, of course I do.
Okay. Hey, Mike. You know, the geek answer is we've had a very unusual soil food web situation. Normally what happens is you get a snow cover in South Central Alaska and the rest of Alaska. What's happened is that we had a entire winter basically with no snow cover. Now what normally happens at the interface of that snow cover and where your yard is that you get a little melt zone. There's a little teeny area in there where there's tremendous amounts of decay and soil food web activity, little guys eating the bigger guy, you know, getting eaten by the bigger guys and pooping and all that kind of stuff going on in there. And we didn't have that this year. That layer wasn't there. Now, some of us don't rake our leaves up. Some of us mulch our leaves over. And so we've had a little bit of it, but not like we normally have. That's going to be an interesting play on people's lawns, because frankly that's all you really need to feed your lawn, but we didn't really have it the way we normally do. So that's the first thing. The second thing is because everything was exposed, I don't know how much activity the worms were impacted. It's just going to be a little different, so we're going to have to keep an eye on it. It's unusual for me. We've had this happen before. At the time I can remember, it's embarrassing, but I'll repeat the story. back when I first got here, I arranged for White Flower Farm. After my fifth year of writing, the Daily News helped sponsor this thing. We had the largest shipment of tulips and daffodil bulbs outside of Holland in the history of mankind. The mailmen were very upset because people were getting these 100 bulb boxes, which they had to distribute, you know. But in any case, it was, and then Exxon came along and they thought, oh, this is a good idea, good publicity. And they bought 5,000 red tulips. We planted them on the hillside over there by Minnesota Drive, right below West High, and we didn't get any snow cover.
Oh, that just, that kills it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing. Fortunately, people's memories are very short. Yeah. I made it through the summer. I was okay. It was touch and go there in my mind. Yeah, so, you know, this is an unusual event. I can't remember it happening other than that one time.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
that,
know, it,
yeah.
That reminds me, I had, I think it was one of my roommates here, asked me to ask you about bulbs. Yeah. and that, can you, because they're supposed to be planted in the fall and you get that nice snow cover, right? And then they come up in the spring. But can you plant bulbs in the spring?
There are some bulbs you can, but if you kept your bulbs from the winter, I mean from last fall, you're not going to have very much success. Uh-huh. Just it doesn't, unfortunately, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You can try it. You might have some success. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing to do would be to put them in pots right now. Don't wait for everything to thaw, but although this is May 1st, so everything will be fine after the 9th. But yeah, I'd pot them up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And since this is running early, you can tell her right now. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I'll tell her, but unfortunately, I think her bulbs are in Fairbanks, so that's a whole different thing, right?
Certainly is. And a whole different gardening area I don't know that much about, but yeah, it's amazing.
Have the zones recently been updated in Alaska? I thought I saw that.
Yeah, there was something this morning. I haven't opened it up yet, but yeah, there's something they have shifted. I'm just suspecting. How could they not?
Right.
How could they not change? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're assuming people are going to know all about this on May 1st. So on May 1st, when people are starting to look at the rest of May and they know those little squirrel ear birch leaves are going to be out there and stuff, what should they be doing to kind of prepare in this weird year? Is there anything different that's going to need to be done? I know a big thing is always to stay off your lawn until it's dried out.
Right. Yeah, I don't think we're going to have very much of a problem there.
Do you think this snow, I mean, how much snow, there's like a foot of snow, isn't there? Or is it melting very fast?
Nah, not a foot. I'd say there's probably about 5-6 inches, but it's so dry, you know, this will be absorbed. And then of course we've got the added advantage of, we've got all these trees and shrubs and everything that are budding out, and they'll start sucking up the water out of the soil. It's Of course, I don't. It's hard to. You can't predict the weather. It's one of those things. Yeah.
So do you kind of look at this spring as almost being a big experiment about what's going to happen to like our rhubarb and our strawberries and our peonies and the plants we're hoping are going to come back, and we don't know if they're going to come back.
Well, you know, what I'm worried about is those people that did not mulch.
Mm-hmm.
The mulch is the savior, and we had a year at the Alaska Botanical Garden where there was no mulching, and lost a lot of stock. So
really?
So mulching is really important, and if you mulch, you should be okay. If you didn't mulch, it's gonna be touch and go. I'm trying to remember how many pre-thaw cycles we had. I don't think we had that many. Maybe this snow will be a little bit of a help, the snow we had just a couple weeks ago, and everything may come out okay. But the problem is, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
I should take that back. There are some things you can do about it. You can pull back your mulch. I would say when those leaves pop out, that's a good time to get your rake out and just pull back mulch. Don't throw it away. Just pull it back. You put it at the side of the garden beds or around your trees, wherever you're going to put it. Pull it back and then in three, four weeks put it back again. But let the soil warm up. That's what we want to have happen. What can you plant? Anything, you know, you might stick a couple of sweet peas out there, you might try some spinach, you might try some which would bolt when it gets too hot, so now's a good time to do that, and too much light. You might try some, again, sweet peas, regular peas, snap peas, kohl crops, kale, those kind of things. Let's see, get your hoses hooked up. Mm-hmm. Everybody should be able to reach every corner of their property with a hose, period. I live on 8 acres. You know, there's exceptions. We have 8 acres, so pretty hard to do. But I can snap together all of my hoses into one gigantic long hose if I need it. But everybody should have their hoses, get them ready, faucets, snap on, snap offs. Those new hoses are, you know, that you can take the water out of and all those are pretty cool. I like those. I don't know when, you know, get your tools out, get them ready. We're there. We're almost.
I know when I was, I think I read your column like a week ago when I was home about a good time right now. If you don't have very much snow cover and you can get out in your yard and it's not wet, now is a good time to get rid of those dead raspberry canes if you didn't already do it. Nothing's leafed out and trim them down.
Right. But I wrote those columns before the snow came.
Yeah.
So it may be too cold and unpleasant to do it. This was really a shocker for the old columns.
I write them
the week that they appear, which is, I think a lot of people who do garden writing, they got a file full of columns. They just pull something out, you know. I write them the week ahead of time because of things like this. It's just such an unusual, who can tell, volcanoes and sun and rain and God only.
Do you have a prediction for what you think the summer is going to be like in terms of temperature, precipitation?
No.
We're in a drought right now, right?
Yeah. What we forget is Anchorage is technically a desert. We don't have a lot of rain. It feels that way.
Yeah.
We have a lot of days where it's cloudy.
Right.
But we're technically, I think somewhere around there, I got Lenore Headla's old book. I think I read that somewhere in there. But I think technically we don't get that much rain. We just get drizzle and cloudy days.
I do have to say that is one of the changes I've noticed since I was a kid we got a lot of drizzle and cloudy, misty days. But now, and this started happening when my kids were young, there were big, huge rain events where it just like it does here in Juneau, huge amounts of rain coming down. And my kids would run out in the rain. And I couldn't do that when I was a kid. It was too cold, but it was warm enough now to run out in these big downpours in the summer.
It really has warmed. I mean, there's no question about it. It's warmed up. And again, it's hard to deny that number. I mean, it's just, but again, you can feel it in your personal experiences. I mean, God, I've been here 50 years. So when we first came up, my father was in the butter business, and he had these freezers. I mean, these were cavern sized freezers where big trucks would drive in and out. And so all his workers wore this stuff called Temptron. It was the first attempt at microfiber filled, and you put the stuff on, you felt like the Michelin tire guy, but you were warm. I mean, you know, we don't use that stuff. Nobody.
Yeah.
The temperature has clearly got warmer, And I remember working and having a new boss come in and saying to the wife of the new boss when it was 50 below zero, it's not normally like this. You know, when was the last time we had below zero temperatures?
I wasn't there January through May last year either, but my daughter had some really cold days. She said, didn't it get really cold last year in January or February?
It got down, I don't remember.
It was not. It was not car killing cold. And back in the, you know, when I was younger, car killing cold. You know,
you had to plug your car in.
Yes, it was weeks and weeks. I had a car when I was like 24 years old that died. You know, because of the cold in 1989.
You would never come up here bringing your car from the lower 48 states, as most of us did. Right. You would never come up here without at least a dipstick heater.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just holy crow. And you had plugs outside, and they sold extension cords with a little light on it to tell you that it was plugged in.
Uh-huh.
So you could be in your kitchen and look out and say, ah, damn, I got to go plug that car in. No, it's plugged in. Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah.
I don't have to go out. It's 20 below.
Not anymore, though. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I read someplace that they said there are two places the date they gave, I think it was 2035. Two places in the United States you're going to want to live from a climate perspective: Portland, Oregon, I don't know why, and Anchorage, Alaska.
Well, you know, I've been saying this for a while. Wally Hickel was onto something when he talked about the water pipeline, and that there are places in the lower 48, especially in the Southwest, where Phoenix is unsustainable, right? I mean, in 10 years they have no water. So where are people going to go for water? We have water. We have more water stored than anywhere else in the world besides Canada.
Yeah. No, we do. I actually, Wally was a great friend of mine. I looked at that project and so did some engineers, and unfortunately the hydraulics of it didn't work.
Yeah.
Great idea, but it didn't really work. But,
but we keep that water for ourselves, and we could have a booming, you know, population here in 10 years.
Right. So. I doubt it. I think we're losing 9,000 people.
It's the dark. That's what people can't handle, the dark.
Well, you know, there'll be a way to figure out how to change that somehow. I don't know.
I wanted to talk to you. One of the things I wanted to really talk to you about is rhubarb, because it is my favorite vegetable.
Really?
Yes, I love rhubarb. Having been a kid who grew up here and pulled rhubarb and dipped it in sugar and ate it, and now I have quite a few rhubarb plants in the house I've been in for 30 years, but been passed down. So they have like sentimental meaning to me from who they came from and everything.
Sure, of course.
So you talked about forcing rhubarb or something in a column really recently, maybe even your column yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, 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 I did. As you know, I have this love-hate affair with rhubarb. people laugh when I tell them, but I mean, I really did eat it every single morning. It was on the breakfast table, you ate it. And if we didn't have it on the breakfast table, we couldn't hide my brother's pills in it. His vitamin and cod liver oil. He would take it with the rhubarb. Anyway, rhubarb is one of those things that really is a great forcing plant. And I think in my column I mentioned that I was some garden in Ireland or wherever, England, and they had these urns that must have been 5 or 6 feet tall. And they literally had no bottom. So they touched, you know, you could put it right over the clump, and then you could pick the top up and check it and see how it was all doing. And I suppose you could take the top off and give it light as well. But no question about it. I mean, if anybody's listening and they've got the capabilities, make me 5 foot tall urns to put. I think everybody in Alaska would have them. Uh-huh. You know, you'd be able to go out there at the end of February, into March, and get yourself some rhubarb.
Yeah, I think that would be so cool. When I was back there a week ago, so beginning of March or beginning of April rather, I went out and checked on my rhubarb, and it was very, very small. But I was like, oh, and then you had talked about protecting it from, which I did not do, unfortunately. Yeah. So I don't know what it looks like now. But
even just a cardboard box, even, you know, the taller the better. No question. It's we complain about not having fruits and things here. And, we got to take advantage of what we have. That's unfortunately for me, that's one of the things we have. But so we need to take advantage about it. And I, you know, Yeah, we just need to take it back.
What is the difference between red rhubarb and green rhubarb?
It's just two different varieties.
Because I've heard, and maybe this is like an old tale, that red rhubarb is wild rhubarb and green rhubarb is domesticated rhubarb.
I don't think so. I think there's just, you know, one's McDonald's and whatever. I don't think so. I think they're different varieties. I know okay. they're different varieties of rhubarb. You know, so I'm waiting for somebody to develop a striped one.
Yeah.
Different colors, you know.
That'd be super cool.
It's coming. I mean, they did it with carrots. Not stripes, right? But yeah.
So, and this is kind of a reminder. I've talked to people who think you're supposed to cut rhubarb and you're supposed to pull rhubarb, not cut it, right?
Oh, yeah. My mother had this thing about, you know, you put your thumb down in the groove and you twist it and you pull it up.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, again, from my perspective, if you cut it and it dies, what do I care? But you know, you may care if you really like it. So, you stick your thumb in there and you pull it up and you throw it in.
Uh-huh.
And the leaves are poisonous, yes. And they also, by the same token, are terrific for cleaning out your dishwasher. So you put them in a cheesecloth or a stocking or something, or you just throw it in raw, you know, the leaf, and run a cycle or two through your dishwasher to clean it out like you can't imagine. And I think I heard, I think I heard you can take it, you can wipe the inside of your microwave. You know how that always gets, or your oven.
Your oven,
and it'll clean it out.
I've never heard that about the leaves. You did mention though growing rhubarb from seed.
Yeah, you can do it, I guess. Why? Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because it always comes back. Hopefully.
Yeah, go find somebody who's got a clump. They're gonna have to divide. It should be divided. I mean, these clumps get really big. Yeah. And it should be divided so that you get youthful, small, delicious, tender stalks, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So when, this is a question about when you have a rhubarb plant that is growing that big seed stalk.
Yeah, take it off.
You just cut that off. Just get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or plant those seeds if you want the seeds.
Yeah,
right?
I guess you could, but I think you just get rid of it. It's sapping the energy from your roots and systems. So just get rid of it.
And does that mean? I'm sorry, I'm going off on rhubarb. You know,
because
I love rhubarb and you don't, but but I love it. So, if it's gone to seed, does that mean you haven't pulled the stalks soon enough or? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's what it means. I mean, I guess, you know, at some point in time during the season, the stuff gets too tough and it just doesn't taste as good.
Yeah.
So you, like any other plant, if you take off the flower before it sets seeds, you know, you trick the plant into saying, damn, I got to grow flowers so I can get seeds. So now I got to start that again. Yeah.
Oh,
and it keeps growing and it needs photosynthesis so it gets leaves, you know, the whole shtick.
Yeah. You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, the conversation with Jeff Lowenfels will continue.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. Connecting Alaskans, life informed.
Diverse city is filled with creatives doing amazing things, but even as a resident, you can only scratch the surface of what Anchorage has to offer. Tune in to Alaska Public Media for State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. Join me, Ammon Swenson, as I interview local artists, play homegrown music, and tell you about upcoming events. That's State of Art, Fridays at 8 p.m. on Alaska Public Media, FM 91.1, or tell your smart speaker to play KSKA.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My conversation with gardening expert and author Jeff Lowenfels continues. The other column I read recently, I think this might have been the yesterday and you one, and you just touched on it a little bit earlier as we were talking, is you talked about the worm casings in the yard, but the column starts with the flies, the annoying flies that everybody has in their house this time of year.
Right, right. That's my favorite. I wrote this column once before, and I'm sort of repeating a little bit of it this time because it was such an unusual situation at my house, looking out at my lawn, seeing a tremendous amount of lawn castings before the snow came. It's just one of those things. You write a column every single, somewhere around here, am I sitting on it? My wife had, she needle pointed a pillow and said, oh, God, I got to write another column.
It would be exhausting. I can't even imagine having to keep up on that.
Yeah, they started out, I think again, I mentioned, they started out sort of as letters to my father. We were gardeners, you know, and this is what I had to write letters home once a week. Otherwise, I was in the doghouse back in the day, you know. And yeah. So I would, here's what I'm doing in the yard. Anyway, I forget what I was even mentioning that.
The gardening column and the fly column.
Oh, yeah.
Done it before.
yeah. So that was to me one of the geekiest discoveries gardening wise any garden writer has ever made. I don't, you know, and I really should send that out to all my garden writing friends because I think they'd flip out. It's so unusual. And how did that connection come about? I don't know. But it's a very peculiar thing to Anchorage in particular. I don't know if it happens in Juneau, but in Anchorage we get these flies and they're everywhere and they sneak into our crummy housing. And then they sneak out again and they lay those eggs in those worm castings. Our lawn this winter, I mean, this just a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, it looked like, you know, the West High football team with their cleats on ran across the yard three times. It was unbelievable how much activity there was going on. Now, I remember moving into this piece of property. There wasn't a dandelion on the property. There wasn't a clover plant on the property. And there wasn't a worm on the property. Mm. And I never saw robins in my backyard on the lawn. Never. Once the conversion to the soil food web system took over, holy crow, what a difference. So it doesn't take that long. And it makes an incredible difference. So anyway, throw that out there.
I think we talked about this last time too, because I really like this idea of letting your lawn return. Like we have these fake green spaces in our yards that we've been socialized to have. And at this point, if people want that for the summer, I mean, you last time we talked to you, you talked about moss and clover. And I love that idea because I don't like to necessarily spend a lot of time mowing my lawn, which isn't a very good lawn anyway. I don't use any of the products or anything, mow what's out there.
Well, that's right. I mean, and it's not just here. It's now become a trend. Let's take credit for it. Anchorage takes the credit, but it's now a trend around the country. And there are a number of reasons why. The first is people are waking up to the fact that I think it was 1954, we had color television, it was just introduced, and they ran the US Open or the Masters, one of those golf tournaments. And you know who had taken over and completely cleared all the clover and weeds from the golf course. I can say who it is, Miracle-Gro. And I'm allowed to say this. Have you heard this story before?
I have not heard this story. I don't think you told this story last time.
So you may not know this, but my picture is on a margarine package. It's called Happy Boy Margarine. And if people want to, they can go look it up. It's embarrassing as hell.
But you're telling us about it. So
I'm old enough now, so I can handle it. But for a while, it was just embarrassing. So there's this margarine, and it's called Happy Boy margarine, and they still make it. My family isn't associated with the company anymore. I think the picture's still on the package. But in any case, Happy Boy margarine had my picture on it, and it was put on there by the advertising manager for my father and my grandfather's butter company, who happened to be a guy named Horace Hagedorn. And he spoke at the Garden Writers Conference once. I was sitting in the audience, and he told the story about how he got into the Miracle-Gro business. He was working for a butter company, and he hated it. All butters, butter is butter. It's basically all the same. It's either USDA butter or it's grade B butter, which is better for baking, but it's always the same. And he was an advertising guy from the University of Pennsylvania, and it was dull. He hated it. He would drive to work. He told the story. He would drive to work. And so he loved the people he worked with, but he hated the business. And so one day he was driving around and he sees a greenhouse and he goes in and it has these gorgeous plants. You know, the rest of the story, it turned out they were fertilized, and he went into business with the guy. And he went into my, after making $25,000 with that New York Times ad before and after, in a week, he went into my father and grandfather. He said, "I love you guys. I quit. I'm going into the business."
Wow.
So he always remained. He told the story, and he didn't realize that I was sitting in the audience. And he gave us all a little package of Miracle-Gro, which we all wanted to have him sign. And I stood up, and he looked up at me because he was a very short guy. You've seen him in some. And he looked up and he goes, "Oh my God, are you Lowenfels?" I go, "Yep." And he apologized for telling the story. He came up and visited me a number of times here in Anchorage. In fact, he gave Mayor Maestrom a year's supply of Miracle-Gro to apply in. I'm convinced if he was alive today, he would convert to organics.
Oh,
no question.
Wow. Yeah.
As it is, Miracle-Gro is the largest seller of organics in the world. But we always remember that other stuff. So it turns out people are onto the fact that the soil food web doesn't work right when you use that stuff. The associated chemicals, the glyphosate and all that, we all know it's bad crap. And so people have stopped. And the lawn itself is a throwback to that original TV show with the golf. And I think folks have just decided, A, it's too much work. B, mowing the lawn with a gas mower is worse than driving your car four times. I mean, it's just got tremendous impacts. It's a lot of work. And frankly, we've lost the war on dandelions. So, it's just why not take advantage of the fact that you've got soil, you can plant flowers. There's a great new company that sells a product called Flawn, F-L-A-W-N, flawn.com. He's got five or six different kinds of wildflowers and wildflower mixes you throw out on your lawn. Forget it. It's gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. And then you throw paths into it.
Yes.
So you mow a little path through your lawn, and all of a sudden, you've got an arboretum botanical garden display. It's just, God, it couldn't be better.
I would love to have that wildflower lawn in my front yard. And the first weekend of May, could you throw seeds out there? And I mean, it's going to take a while, right?
Heck yeah, sure. Yeah. You may want to take your mower or get a mower and just cut the lawn down to nibs, or aerate the lawn so that you can, some of the seeds go into the soil. You want that seed to have good contact with the soil. So you got to really take care of it. But you'll have all summer to do it, again.
I want to do that. And I have an electric mower, which actually transformed my hatred towards mowing the lawn, because it's still a time suck and everything, but it's quieter, and I know I'm not having to go buy gas, and it's not stinky, and I'm not polluting, so I really recommend an electric mower. It just is great.
They do make sense. Unfortunately, I have a tractor, and it's not electric. I should maybe get one. But I love mowing patterns in the lawn that I don't turn into a meadow. That's always fun. I would love someday to get everybody in Anchorage to put a pattern in their front lawn. Let's go left, right, left, right, left, right. You know, diagonal to the front door, all throughout Anchorage. You go do the opposite of what your neighbor did. Wow, wouldn't that be
cool? That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, then fly a drone over your.
Oh, yeah.
It would be fun. Anyways, that's me. I'm crazy. But you know, I've had a lawn. My lawn's been in the John Deere magazine, dealer magazine, twice.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
Yeah.
That's
got to
be the pinnacle. That's
proud
the pinnacle,
days.
Isn't it?
Very
yeah.
I did want to do a coffee table book called Mowing America's Great Lawns. You know, and get John Deere to sponsor.
Yeah.
Fly me around with a John Deere mower. Do the White House, Strawberry Fields in Central Park, you know, the Presidio. Gosh, you know, just put different patterns on them and then have somebody drone over them and put a coffee table book together.
Have you pitched this book to them? You should pitch the book to them. Get it done.
Oh, God. You know, I've done 5 books. First of all, I kicked myself for, wow, how did I do that? This writing a book's a real pain. Real pain. I'm not doing that again if I can help it.
But a coffee table book, that seems like you could take some of the pain out of it by having somebody else take the pictures and use little blurbs and everything.
Yeah, I should try to pick that up. I know, it's hard to say.
There's other things to do.
Yeah.
Before we get into volcano stuff, talk about invasive plants and trees that people should be looking at as spring starts and things start to grow and how they can get rid of these things.
Right. Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I think the first one is mountain ash, you know, which we just have too many of, and they're terrible because what happens is they take over the riparian areas. So nobody, in fact, I think it's against the law to plant them and to sell them. That doesn't mean people don't have them. So, in fact, our yard, we had, I think, probably the largest one in town. I mean, it was gigantic. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many kids would play in this thing all at once. And we finally took it down. It took about 10 years before the seedlings stopped popping up because I mowed them down on the lawn. So that's a
Are you talking about mountain ash or are you talking about choke cherries or maydays?
Mayday. I'm so sorry. Mayday.
Yes, maydays.
Yeah.
Yes. They're terrible.
Yeah. But so are mountain ash.
I have a huge mountain ash, but I've gotten rid of my maydays.
Yeah, I don't think mountain ashes you're allowed to have anymore. And now I'm trying to think. You took me by surprise. There's an awful, awful, it's a woody, bushy kind of thing. And once it gets in your yard, it takes over the entire yard. It spreads by stallones. If a piece of it falls down,
it's a weed.
Terrible.
And so, does it have like these big, hard stalks? And it grows in clumps, right? I think I have some of that.
Yeah,
if
you have it,
it's terrible.
It's the worst thing you can possibly have. It'll take over. There's some downtown Anchorage. Once it's there, you really you got to blow it up. You got to get some professional to come in and take it out.
Okay.
It's terrible stuff. Yeah. So what else do we have that's invasive? The dandelion, but that's, you know, we've lost that war.
I know. I always tell people, my next door neighbor, we always joke about you in the spring because she would be out there like trying to get all the dandelions out. And,
me too.
And I'm like, come on, Jeff Lohenfeld says the war's over. We should just forget it.
Yeah. You know, and I, without question, I was a general in that war. and I'm a prisoner of war now. Yeah. No. And if people don't like them, mow them down. That's the answer.
And there's like 2 fleshes of dandelions, right?
Yeah, and then once they're gone, they're gone. Yeah. I have a friend who he has a dandelion-less lawn, and he does a dandelion fork. He doesn't use any chemicals.
Okay. Yeah.
And he sends me pictures of it every now and then. But I can send him pictures of mine when those fleshes aren't in. It's as green as can possibly be. It's a sturdy plant. What the heck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if I could replace it with something else. And I, as I always tell people, if we could figure out, and I'm sure somebody's working on it, if we could figure out how to get different colored dandelions,
yes,
people would plant them. Now, you grew up
here. That'd be so cool. Yep.
When I first came up here, there were Arctic poppies in people's lawns.
Yep. Tons of Arctic poppies. Yeah, tons. Ooh, tons.
That's a beautiful, beautiful lawn. Yeah, I would love to see that again. So, yeah, maybe a different colored dandelion. If anybody's listening to this and you end up with a dandelion that's a distinctly different color, let me know.
Yeah. You'll start working on more of them, huh?
I know just the guy to take it to, and he'll clone it out. I actually have a friend whose business is developing new plants.
And
one time I had a raspberry that had white and green leaves. It's gorgeous. It was stunning. Uh-huh. I gave him something. Mm-hmm. Didn't work. It didn't work.
Yeah. What about that that purple vetch? Oh, purple vetch? That is ended up in my yard and in my garden, and it's terrible.
Yeah, and you can
and it will just encompass everything and just nothing. It's terrible.
Mow it, sickle it, burn it. There's nothing you can really do about it. It was introduced to the Palmer area by the United States Department of Agriculture because it's a nitrogen fixing plant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an incredible spreader. Well, you know, but the same token, so is fireweed. But people don't seem to mind that. So it's all in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, because fireweed's from here, right? That's part of it, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, one person's weed is another person's favorite flower.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that we venerate fireweed, and in its name is the word weed.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of strange.
And we love it here. It's very iconic to our area. So.
Yep.
Okay. So with the choke cherry things, like I remember because they're like in some of the paths I walk on in my neighborhood, they've completely taken over, and it's dark in there, and there's nothing growing underneath them.
Right.
But the thing with them is that when you see those little seedlings coming up in the spring, you just pull them right out, right?
Yeah.
So you'll see the little tiny.
Yeah, or you mow them down. This is the one area. I have a friend. He lives out at Hope, and he's in charge of getting rid of a lot of these. And they use glyphosate to do it. They paint glyphosate on it. And it's, you know, and I fight with them all the time. I mean, it's something that's got to get rid of these things. I wish we could figure. My complaint is by using the glyphosate, you're not figuring out a new way. But the railroad uses glyphosate on same thing when they have problems with them. So it's a bad thing. But
yeah. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes left to talk about the volcano. And it is, like I said earlier, it is April 12th.
Right.
The volcano, we do not have any ash that's migrated from the volcano yet.
Right.
But we've been warned that it's most likely going to happen. So, and I know that a lot of whether we get ash or not depends on how the wind is blowing when it finally goes off. But
and how long it blows and how many times, you know, people forget it goes more than once sometimes. So
that's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And I think people have made sure that their pets, their dogs especially, are covered. They've got the goggles for their dogs and respirators. And it's pretty hilarious seeing people getting ready. And it's really great because dogs have to go outside to go to the bathroom. So
well, they don't have to, but I think you're going to want them to.
No,
it's the volcano, you know, whether it blows or not, volcanic generically, so your producer can fool around with this, generically, volcanic ash is pretty good stuff for a couple of reasons. First of all, I should say a limited amount of volcanic ash. You know, we don't want to end up with a situation where, you know, we got a valley of 10,000 smokes and there's no, you know, 6 feet of ash. But if we just get an inch, maybe even 2 inches, that's probably a bit excessive. But, you know, an inch or so of ash is got a lot of good stuff in it. These pyroclastics, as my friend Wayne would say, the ejectamenta contains glass particles. These glass particles will work their way into the soil and help drainage and soil structure. They contain minerals which will feed the lawn. I'm sure they'll probably increase the pH of the lawn a little bit, which won't hurt it at all. So generally, it's a pretty good thing. You know, it'll cover everything. So you got to think about some of the stuff that you would not normally think about. for example, everybody talks about their pets, they talk about their cars. How do you get this ash off your greenhouse without mm-hmm. scratching it? I mean, it's a serious problem. This stuff is glass. So, you know, you got to think about, my answer, I think, is you get your air blower, your leaf blower, which I hope is battery operated and very quiet. You know, you might wash it off, but you got to worry about these things. It's not something people would normally think about. Yeah.
So actually coming to think about it, like that would be one thing people might want would be a leaf blower instead of, because even a hose, it seems like things could clump and drag it down, but a leaf blower will blow it off onto the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a leaf blower might make some sense. What are the problems we're going to have with the ash? Your greenhouse fans, you got to think about those, which people, you know, you're thinking about your furnace, but you're not thinking about your greenhouse. You know, that's probably about it right there. But
what about when you're in the yard? Like if we got an inch of ash, I mean, it seems like you don't want to be mowing, or do you, or do you need to protect yourself? Like a respirator?
Yeah, I think you got to protect yourself for sure. You know, these are little particles of glass.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you want to definitely protect yourself. I would not mow. Mm-hmm. I might turn some of it into my compost pile, because I think mm-hmm. it's a good addition for that. Yeah.
And what is the effect on plants, and maybe more specifically, or also, will things be safe to eat? Or are you going to have to like really clean off your rhubarb, maybe a lot more vigorously than you do? But be careful, because depending on the size of the particle, there are little pieces of glass. And how does that work into your fingers and your skin?
I don't know. We're going to have to hope that if we have, not getting too political, but if DOGE hasn't done away with the Department of Agriculture, maybe we'll get some advice as to what the right things are to do. I think people just have to be very careful. Water should work on the rhubarb, but very careful. Yeah.
And if it goes all
summer. How about your strawberries?
I was just thinking strawberries, and then at the end of the summer, your raspberries, which are probably even more weird and porous than strawberries, right?
Yes. Yeah, you know, I think, again, we're going to have to look at it. We're going to have to hope the Cooperative Extension Service helps us out, although I don't think we have it here in Anchorage anymore. I think it's all up in Fairbanks. Where's Julie Riley when we need her? So we're just going to have to pay attention, and people are going to have to read the garden column. I know it's tough. But hopefully we'll cover some of the stuff in the garden column. And of course, I hate to say it, but if you send me an email, I usually answer within a couple of days.
Yeah, you are pretty good in that. I do have to thank you that you responded to me so quickly, because I'm like, oh, this is perfect timing for this gardening outdoor explorer with everything that's going on. So you do answer your emails quickly.
There are some days when I get an awful lot of guy.
The overall scheme of things, though, like you mentioned earlier, a little bit of volcanic ash is really, really helpful to growing in the long run. And the last time we had, my kids remembered this, and I didn't even remember it, but it was back. They remember walking to school with a little bit of ash on the snow.
Yeah.
Was it 2014 or 16?
I don't know when it was, but I remember I was going, where was I going? Fishing? Yeah. Someplace, but I flew over Anchorage and everything was, you know, gray except where people had been walking. People weren't driving.
That was in the one in when Mount Spur went before, and right? Because Readout has gone in between that.
Man, yeah. Where do we live?
I know. We live in a great place. It's fantastic. Yeah. Every day
is
different.
Well, I got to tell you, I wake up every morning and I look at the AVO as if we're not going to get warning from, you know, every media in the world, but we won't hear it. We won't hear it, and we won't know it unless somebody tells us.
Right.
It's coming.
I have some friends who have gotten some pretty cool pictures already of Mount Spur with plumes coming, not huge, obviously, but you can see this, like the smoke coming out of it, the steam coming out of it.
So is Mount Spur, I shouldn't ask this, but I mean, is it over by the valley at 10,000 smokes, or is it?
I don't think it's that far over. It's only 80 miles from Anchorage.
And
that's more down closer to the Aleutian.
And what are people doing there? Yeah, I saw that they just rescued some skiers. Huh?
Oh.
women. How do you get there? How do you get there? You must fly.
You have a helicopter or a plane take you in.
Wow. Very exciting. It's exciting.
What is the difference between, so, I mean, we could have this double threat this summer, potentially, of wildfires and a volcano.
Right.
Is ash fall from wildfires, does that not help fun. Our environment too? I mean, it's not fun. Yeah, it's in smoke. Yeah,
well,
and stuff.
It's, but it's not flammable, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's organic material. It's, you know, burnable. Yeah, what if we have both? That would be something. And that I think people have to be very careful. So right now, even though we've got this little bit of stuff on the ground, we don't have a lot of snowpack low. Up high, there's great snowpack. Down low, you know, we've got a real fire potential. And we just have to be very careful. Open burns. And people are going to want to burn because we had winds. And there is detritus everywhere. Mm-hmm. My advice is pick up the big stuff and run the other stuff over with a mower if you can. Mm-hmm. And just let it settle in and act as good food for the lawns. And phew, the big stuff, take the big stuff, pile it around the base of your trees and walk on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Break it. But I don't think
and,
you ought
and
to be,
finally
don't
in terms
burn
of
it.
Wildfires yeah there's that idea of defensible space around your house, and how would that, like, most of us have like gardens, like flower gardens up against the house, and I don't know if that's
but an awful lot of us have trees. We've got a lot of people have trees right up against the house. You better have your chainsaw ready just in case.
Now
there are some areas I live out on the bluff. There's just the whole bluff trees. Who's going to go and cut all those down? Nobody.
Right.
They don't want them to. I mean, but so there are areas around here where you're just not going to be able to run. So what you want to do is have your seeds, your special seeds, in a nice place where you can grab them when you run. So you've got some valuables with you.
Oh, yeah.
First certificate in your tomato seeds. You know,
that's all that's important.
Right.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully I'll get you back sooner than I did, maybe at the end of the summer, and we can kind of check in and talk about getting ready for winter again and what it might look like and how everybody's survived potentially a crazy summer.
9 more days. Those birch leaves will be big enough. So
yay!
Pleasure being here.
Yay. That's it for today's show. Thanks to my guest, Jeff Lowenfels. You can find more advice from Jeff on gardening on the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show is produced by Tobin Shelby with help from Ammon Swenson. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting is generously supported by the City of Sandpoint. Sandpoint is a first-class city in the Aleutians East Borough, located on Humboldt Harbor on the northwestern Popoff Island. Anchorage is 575 nautical miles to the northeast. The Sandpoint City Council meets the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. Contact the City of Sandpoint by calling 907-383-2696, emailing sptcity@arctic.net, or visiting their website at sandpointak.com. KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Fall.